everybody, this is complicated, you know, just like ex-girlfriends.
There you are.
Okay, this is complicated, just like ex-girlfriends. Excellent, yes, yes.
Alrighty, this week I'm talking to my old friend Wee, a great juggler and magician based in Singapore. You can check him out at singaporejuggler.com. Alright, let's take it away, Wee.
Hey, Ben.
Hello, Wee. How are you?
I'm good. Yourself?
I'm very, very good. Great to hear from you.
Same here.
Oh, Wee. So, it's so weird, you know, because I went to Singapore and I don't live there anymore. I went there just for a few days. Just a couple of days. I'm walking along Orchard Road and there you are juggling on Orchard Road. And then I go away back to Hong Kong where I'm staying now, where I live. And then I don't know when, but maybe a month or a few years or a year or so later or a few months, I go back to Singapore for a few days. There I am walking along Orchard Road and there you are again.
Yeah, I'm always there. Always, yeah.
I mean, that is commitment.
Maybe even more. Maybe passion.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
No, it is, because I mean, for people who are thinking about doing that, it's quite an effort the first time to actually put yourself out in public. You're not being paid to be there. No one's asked you to be there. And you make an effort to just commit yourself to go out, and it takes a long while. You've got to travel there, you've got to set up your props, and you've got to be there juggling.
Yes, yes.
And you don't know. You might make some money. You might not make any money. You might make a good contact for another show. You might not.
True. Yes.
Yeah, but you're just you're out there.
And I think commitment comes from, or rather stems from passion. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, no matter how unpromising it is, how uncertain it is, I would still do it. And then there, yeah, I was an author many years ago. Yeah.
So how long have you been doing that? And how often a week do you do it? Was it just chance I saw you? Are you there pretty regularly?
Yes, I've been doing it regularly for, like, I think, if I remember correctly, since 2009. So that is like how many years?
10, 11 years?
Yeah. Actually, I wanted to do even earlier. I got my license to pass from NAC, National Arts Council, in 2007. But, well, you know, busking is kind of a unpopular thing back then. I mean, from my personal point of view, especially because people tend to associate it with begging. So there was a little bit of hesitation, and that's why it took me about 2 years to eventually pass, even though I had my license.
Well, that was my point, because first of all, in Singapore, people are listening, in Singapore, it is legal to busk in certain areas, but you have to apply and get a license.
Then
my point was, yeah, that's exactly my point, is it's one thing to say, it's one thing to have the idea, I'm going to go out every day, I'm going to practice, I'm going to be performing, isn't this great, isn't this wonderful, but actually, to have the bravery, in a way, to get out there for the first time, it's quite hard, isn't it? So it took you a couple of years to really. What made you finally, after 2 years?
Very hard. Yeah, very hard indeed. Yeah, I actually struggled. During the first couple of years, as in like, should I do it? Should I not do it? What if I do it? How would my friends, how would my relatives perceive me? Why am I associating myself, you know, with people who are, you know, I mean, to be respectful of them, I mean, why am I associating myself with people who are, you know, seemingly begging, you know?
That's the word.
Yeah.
Seemingly begging, yeah. So, yeah, in Singapore, it's people aim to go to university. It's like, you could be a doctor, you can be a lawyer, you can't be a street performer.
You can't be a beggar. That is more or less the kind of mindset of many parents, especially to their children.
Do you have a did you have a full-time job at the time? How did you find the time to perform on streets?
Sorry, I can't quite hear the part.
Did you have a full-time job, a full-time proper job in inverted commas? How did you find the time to perform on the streets?
Okay, I do not have a full-time job, and that is the reason why I'm able to go down to Orchard, especially Orchard Road, to bask anytime I want. But having said this, I do have another hat that I wear until today. I'm actually doing some workshop in schools to teach children balloon sculpturing, for example. Juggling itself and even magic tricks. But you know, again, it's just another hat that I'm wearing. So yeah, I don't know which one is the full-time job: basking or conducting workshops or even performing in birthday parties.
Well, I'm gonna give you a big clap. I'm clapping now.
Because
I would say they're both the same thing. You're making a living as an entertainer. And
it is actually quite a unique way to make a living. Initially it was a bit of a challenge, but now I'm kind of like, you know, I've established myself, so quite okay now.
So how did you, let's go right back to the beginning, because just to let the listeners into a secret, I lived in Singapore in the 1990s. There was a basic sort of juggling club was set up, and I met people like you learning to juggle. But where did you go from it being a hobby to starting to want to perform professionally?
Yes.
So how did it go from a hobby to making the decision to become semi-professional and then professional?
I see. I think it has got to do a lot with perception. I mean, how I see things. Yeah, I think like you, I think we saw potentials. Because here in Singapore, especially, everyone is in the rat race. The market to have such kind of ads coming in is quite a niche. I saw that. And I think maybe you saw that as well, and that's how I came in. I mean a lot of risk involved, because there's no certainty that you would make it. But I took a challenge, and I decided that I should turn my passion into a career. So here I am.
Were there any big turning points that made you that helped you on the way?
Certainly, yes. Well, it's an open secret now. It's about the dollar and cents. There are money to be made.
That was it.
That's a turning point. I mean, you see people throwing into your head, especially, and then you tell yourself, hey, you know, I'm alive with all this. I will be alive with all this.
So
you just zoom in.
And what kind of work, what kind of ways of making money have you found? Like, I guess you get some work teaching workshops in schools. You get some corporate stage shows for family fun days and things. Is that right?
Actually, all of those. I mean, jobs offer come in when it comes to gigs of all sorts. I do workshop, I do birthday parties, I even do corporate function. I mean, like, you know, during annual dinner and dance, they want people to liven up the atmosphere, they want people to add vibrancy into the environment. So that's where we come in. And they pay well, they are willing to pay.
Okay, brilliant.
It's something different.
Great. How long have you been full-time?
So it's been, yeah. It's been like, how many years now? Busking is like 11 years, 10 years.
Yeah.
But doing this for a living, I would say it's about maybe 17 years now.
Long time.
In fact, I would say that busking is more like a honing of skills, so that when I do for corporate people, when I do gigs, I'm much better.
That was one of my questions. So, why do you go busking? So one reason is it's a great way just to make your show good. You're practicing every day.
Yeah, to hone your skills and to have indirect a platform to practice with live audience, with real environment.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what busking is to me. Yeah. Okay. I mean, you wouldn't want to be going to a paid job and then not doing well because you don't have the experience.
It's a way of rehearsing.
So, yeah, but
okay.
Busking gives you that platform. Yeah, that platform to gain experience.
Would you say then that making money and also making contacts, busking isn't so useful?
Well, if you have got both, it would be very nice. I mean, I don't know. I always see busking as a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
On the one side, you get to hone your skill. You get, like I said moments ago, you know, a real platform to practice.
Mm.
And then on the other side, you are having income to keep you alive when there are no gigs order.
Okay, so you can make some money as well, some reasonable,
useful money. Yes, indeed. Reasonable amount of money, yes.
And how about making contacts? Because, for example, you're putting yourself out in the public. I just happened to visit Singapore 2 times randomly, walk along Watson Road, and there I see you. So if someone else sees a juggler in Singapore, maybe they've seen you, and they, oh, that's the guy, well, cool. Does that ever happen?
Definitely, 100%, I would say, yeah. I mean, if you want to advertise yourself without having to pay too much for the course, I think busking is a very good avenue to advertise yourself. Very. I have got so many gigs that stems from busking. I mean, people saw my show, they like it, and they say, hey, do you do birthday parties or do you perform in annual dinner and dance? I say, yeah, of course, check me out, this is my website.
Okay, so you have your business card and you can get out your website. Do you have a business card you hand out or something you can hand out to passers-by?
Yes, I do.
Okay, that's it. I'm going to do the same. When I have a free day, I'm going to go down. There's a place in Hong Kong at the harbour front where I could just do the same thing as you. It'd be great fun. Practice
looking
my skills.
Looking forward to seeing you, Ben.
Practice my skills. Do practice a new show. Get a little bit of money. Give up my name card. Yeah, sounds good to me. I like it.
Yes.
How about your costume? You generally wear sort of a bright coloured shirt, some bright coloured shorts, bright coloured socks, and maybe you wear a bright coloured tie. Singapore's really hot outdoors. How do you cope? Are there any special costume requirements for you?
Good question, because initially when I started off busking, I did take the trouble to make myself conspicuous by wearing colourful attire or even weird looking attire. But after a couple of years, I have decided that I shouldn't do it anymore, because wow, they are really hot. I mean, when you putting on a tie just to look different, but then having to deal with the humid weather that we have got here. So I decided against it after a while, because I also noticed that a lot of buskers who are really good do not depend on the attire, but rather on the actual performance to wow the crowd. So I thought I should be like that as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, it works. I mean, what we do, kind of like speaks louder than what we wear.
So when you're, So when you're street performing, you wear something that isn't too hot.
Comfortable, yes. I always make sure that I am comfortable in my attire now, as against the earlier days when I didn't, you know, do it.
Do you wear wristbands to keep your hands from getting too sweaty?
Yes, that one is a must. Yes, yeah. Because juggling is very, very sweaty and activity. Yeah.
This is what I love. Okay, here's a. I love getting tips. Yeah, if you're performing in a hot, humid country outdoors and you're juggling, the sweat is going to run down your arm onto your hands, and your hands are going to get so slippy that you won't be able to hold the juggling clubs. So yeah, wear tennis players' sweatbands around your wrists. Is that the thing you do as well?
Exactly, yeah. Precisely. In fact, I can't live without my wristbands.
Yeah.
You will definitely see me with my wristband when I juggle, yeah, because we're talking about hours and hours of sweating out there.
Yeah. Do you have more than one set? I have more than one set, so as one gets smelly and sweaty, I can put on the other set.
Yeah, you can say that. Yes, yes.
How about sweat coming into the eyes? Do you ever have that problem? I used to have that problem. I'd sweat so much on my head that the sweat would drip into my eyes and I couldn't see anymore.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, I usually would turn my head onto my shoulder and then quickly rub them off.
Yeah,
it's not a big issue. Yeah, not a big issue.
What about if you get some sort of corporate event or family fun day or even a community show? Would you put on a costume then?
Oh, definitely. That one is a more like adhering to the client's expectation or request. Yeah.
And what kind of costume do you wear for those shows? Do you have a favorite costume?
One of my favorites is red white stripes.
Okay. Yeah.
Because they are very very carnival in looks. Yeah. In fact, recently I did a roving juggling gig with this company, and I didn't know that their theme was red white, as in like circus tentage.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah.
When I went there, I was pleasantly surprised. I mean,
oh,
it's like
brilliant.
There is an orchestrated effort between me and the clients.
Oh, that's lucky. Nice. Do you use any music in these corporate shows or stage shows?
For roving, I do not provide my own music, because already they have got music blasting in their own PA system. I mean, I'm talking about the clients. Busking, I have my own set of songs. Yeah, you can't be juggling with silence. Yeah.
Okay.
I have two kinds of busking, by the way.
Sorry?
I've got two kinds of busking acts, actually. One is called the walk by, where I just keep juggling while standing on a high platform.
Yes.
I would just keep juggling.
Yes.
That one is more like for weekdays when there is not many, when there are not many people.
Right.
When there's no critical mass. But there's another one which is called the circus act. I think they call it the circle act.
Yes.
And that's when I do shows. I mean, when I perform a 10 to 15 minutes show, and people would gather around, people would be watching me intensively on what I have to offer. That one is all for weekend. Yeah, and that is only possible if you have got enough people, enough pedestrians on the streets.
Okay, let's talk about that then. So. Maybe it's a weekend and the sidewalk, the pavement has got quite a lot of people passing by. So you think, oh, okay, now I can do a show, a circle show. So how do you get them to stop and watch you?
Yes. I love because doing the kind of shows I really love. I mean, yeah. Because you see people smiling at you, you know, you see people being awed in their face, and
So my question is. My question is, so you decided you're going to do a circle show, people stopping to watch you. So how do you begin your circle show? What is the show? How does it start? How does it develop? And how do you finish that show?
Oh, I see. Okay. Again, this is a very good question because for many baskers, this is a challenge, gathering crowd.
Yes.
It's a real challenge, yeah. For me, I usually would do something really attention-seeking.
Mm.
Like, for example, floating table. I don't know whether you know.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. That one is very eye-catching.
So, if anybody doesn't know, it's a proper table. It looks like it's made out of heavy wood. It looks like it looks firm and solid and wooden. And
yes.
you put your hands near it and it starts just to float up and float around.
Yes, that's the one, yes. It's very amazing, yes.
So would you be playing music at the same time or
yes, eerie music.
Eerie music. So this is what you do, you've got the eerie music, the table starts levitating and people stop and start watching.
Yes.
And yeah. Do you need to talk and say the show's about to begin, or is it just visual? No need to talk.
I would usually follow up with the ad with things like, "Hey, everybody, if you think this is awesome, you ain't seen nothing yet because this is only a tip of the iceberg. So stay on." Because really, this is a good show, you know. I've seen it so many times before, and then they would laugh, you know.
Yes.
And then,
this is really a good show because I've seen it so many times before.
So then you get them to stop, and then I think once you've got three or four people stopping to watch, very quickly the crowd would build up.
Okay.
But having said all this, it can be quite a challenge when there are still not enough critical. Mass of people passing by.
So would you keep the table bit, you might do it longer and longer and longer until finally you have three or four people stopping. It might take 30 seconds, it might take 2 minutes, it might take 5 minutes, but when you've got the three or four people...
Never more than 1.5 to 2 minutes,
yeah.
Because it would be unfair to those people who have already stopped.
Yes.
In anticipation for the show to start, yeah.
Okay. So as long as a couple of people have stopped to watch the show, you do about a minute and a half maximum of the table, and then you make a few announcements that you haven't seen anything yet. The show is going to be amazing because you've seen it before, and you know.
Yeah, and then I will straight away jump into my first act. Never mind, you know, if there are still not enough people, because from my experience, the crowd will build up.
Build up, right. So what is your first act after the table?
My favorite is the Cups and Balls.
Okay.
Are you familiar with
yes.
that? I would always say things like, "Hey guys, you know, this is the oldest magic trick in the world, and if you don't quite know what is going to happen, maybe you should just order more, watch closely, and then I will go into my head." Yeah.
So
Cups and Balls is about balls disappearing, vanishing right before the eyes of the audience.
So you must have a stage table then for that act.
Yes, I do have a folding table, yeah.
Right. Okay, so just quickly to go off on a tangent, so how do you carry all this stuff? It must be quite a lot of stuff to carry. You've got a folding table, you've got your levitating table, you've got your box of juggling stuff, you've got your sound system, and you're taking this to a straight... Can it all fit in one suitcase? How do you carry everything?
You would be surprised at what I'm going to say in a few moments' time. Actually, yes, all this go into just one trunk.
Yeah.
And it's a result of a lot of planning.
Yeah.
It's a result of a lot of try and error here and there over the so-called years.
Was there anything?
But you're right. Everything goes into the sunk.
Yes. Wow. So, are there any tips you've got? Do you need to have wheels on your trunk? Do you need to have a special handle to help drag it along?
Certainly there are wheels on my trunk. Yeah. It's not a big one. It's only about 30 inch by 16 inch by 12 inch. And why not any bigger?
Well, yeah, why not any bigger?
Because I have to travel on the train with it. Any bigger, the staff in the train system will probably forbid me. Yeah.
And you have you're playing music, so you must have a speaker as well. Is that quite small? And yet, how?
My speaker is a very good speaker. I invest quite a fair bit. It's an expensive one.
So, say the brand, so people can know.
It's very slick. Yeah, it's very slick.
Yeah.
It fits into my trunk together with the other props. Can you believe it? Yeah.
And what is the brand of your speaker?
Mipro from Taiwan.
How does spell?
Mipro as in MIPRO.
There we go. Mipro. And does it come with a wireless microphone?
That one is a waterproof microphone.
Oh, waterproof.
It's not from Mipro. This is my third one. The first and second didn't last long because I didn't know that they are not waterproof because we perspire a lot.
There you are.
So the first two microphones were damaged by my sweat.
Oh, this is again fascinating. Wow.
Yeah.
Because Singapore is so
humid. I told myself, you know, there must be a solution to this. You know, I'm sure in the market they sell microphones that are, I mean, headset microphone, by the way, they are waterproof. And who uses them?
Yeah.
The gym instructors.
Oh, there you go. Like they sweat a lot as well.
So I spoke to some gym instructors and asked them to recommend, and they recommended me this one that I'm having.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's been with me now for about 2.5 years. So it really, really is good. I cannot remember the brand. It starts with S, but I'm not with it now. I'm outside, so I can't mention the brand.
Doesn't matter.
It's a very famous brand. Yeah.
So if anybody wants to find out what it is, just look at what a gym instructor uses and find out from them. It's the same type of thing.
Yes, please, yeah.
Wow, that's really cool. Okay, so you do cups and balls as your first. Well, once you've got the crowd, you get the crowd with a floating table, then you've got the cups and balls. And what happens next?
I would go into juggling the balls.
Oh yeah.
Next, bean bags rather, not balls, bean bags. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many patterns. Just by doing free ball juggling.
And
it's a good introduction to the heavier other juggling acts that follow.
I see. Are you talking while you do the three ball juggling, or is it just onto music?
Sorry, with the music? Yeah,
are you talking? Yes. Do you talk while you do the three ball juggling?
Yes. I have a lot of so-called wits in my talking when I juggle.
Tell us one of the bits.
I would say things like, even though this is a three ball juggling that I'm gonna do, there are many patterns, you know. Wait for it, and then I would, from the basic three ball cascade, go into, I can't remember the name of that pattern, but it's like, you know, difficult. It's like complicated.
Okay, so you're not actually telling specific jokes. You're just explaining, talking to them about what you're doing. Is that right?
I joke about what I do. Like, hey everybody, this is complicated. You know, just like my ex girlfriends.
There you are. That's what I wanted to hear. Okay, this is complicated. Just like my ex girlfriends. Excellent. Yes. Okay, so you're doing that sort of stuff. Do you have any influences? Because there aren't that many street performers in Singapore. Do you have anybody, how did you, yeah, do you have, is there anybody who influenced you? Where did you learn, where did you, who did you follow? Where did this come from? Or is it all from your head?
I see. What started me off in juggling? Is that your question?
No, it's sort of who has influenced your style? Like, where did these jokes come from? Did you...
Oh, I see. Okay. Now, back in the 1990s, to be more precise, 1997, Singapore has got a Singapore River Buskers Festival.
Yeah.
It was ongoing for a good number of years until, if I remember correctly, 2005. But what I'm trying to say is that from 1997 until about 2005, in that series of years of Singapore River Buskers Festival, I saw a lot of buskers, real good ones, performing, and they were not just good technically, they were also very witty, very funny. And I pick up a line or two from them here and there, jot it down, and I was already aspiring to be a busker back then, but I wasn't ready. I knew that I wasn't ready yet because the technicality aspect of my skill wasn't there yet. But I jot down whatever I thought they say, witty. And then, eventually when I came out to busk myself, I kind of introduced them into my own show, with a bit of twists and turns, so that, I'm not really copying them totally. I'm getting ideas from them and then coming up with my own.
Yes.
Yeah.
I remember that. So there was a Singapore Rivers Buskers Festival, and they'd have international buskers flown into Singapore or passing by would come to Singapore, and for about a week, there'd be massive amounts of street performing. Every year, about 7 years. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, I don't know why they stop it, but I think it's because of the cost. But I really hope Singapore someone would bring this festival back. It's really good.
Yeah, that was great. That was really good. So that was what influenced you. I see.
Very much. Yes, very much.
So, juggling balls with gags. Some jokes. How about after the balls? What comes next?
For a period of time, I juggled knives as well.
Okay.
Yeah, that one is really awesome. That one is really, really awesome. Yeah.
How come you stopped? Because,
how come I stopped? Because my knives are heavy. They tire me out very quickly.
Right.
Because when I bask, I do easily about 7 to 8 shows.
Yes.
And they really tire me out.
Yeah.
So I pause. I wouldn't say now that I quit. In fact, I'm going to resume juggling knives. Maybe this year end. Yeah. But I think it's good. Knife juggling.
So
I can never do fire, even though I have got fire torches. Because on the trains, they do not allow you to carry flammable items like the fuel. Much as I would like to do fire juggling, I can't.
God, how did I manage to do fire juggling in Singapore? I think I must have taken a taxi to every single show.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, so the reason you've stopped the knives for the street performing is because you might do 7 or 8 shows in one day, and they're just too heavy. You just get too exhausted.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. Yes.
If you had a paid corporate show, or if you were on either roving or on stage for a corporate event, would you take the knives with you then?
Yes, I would assess the situation. First, if there are a lot of adults in the congregation more than children, then I would do knife juggling.
Right.
But if there are many, many children in the audience, I try to refrain because some parents are sensitive.
You've got to be careful.
The children get influenced and then they would go around playing with knives after that, So, I have to be careful.
Yeah. Okay. So, you used to do knife juggling. after the so what do you do instead of the knife juggling? Do you go to
clubs? Clubs juggling, yes.
And
in place of in fact now I have got a very, very interesting ad.
Yes.
Which I introduced into my show about 2 years ago.
Oh, tell me, yeah, tell me.
It's about juggling on roller bola.
Oh, nice, lovely.
Yeah, roller bola is, you know, you standing on a plank that sits on a pipe, and it's a balancing act, yeah.
So you're standing on the rolling cylinder on a piece of wood, balancing, rolling back and forth, and at the same time you're juggling.
Yeah, that's right. And I've kind of like upgraded my act by standing on not just one tier, but on a second tier. I hope I can bring across what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So you've got if you're on a second tier, you've got, I guess you've still got one cylinder, but you've got two pieces
of
wood.
Two buckets.
Okay.
So let me elaborate a little bit here. A pipe on the ground.
So you have
followed by a plank sitting on it.
Okay. So I'm gonna
sitting on the plank. Yeah.
I'm gonna translate. So you got the pipe.
Okay.
You got the pipe or the cylinder. A tube. On top you have the plank. Okay, that's the basic roller bowler. And then what do you put on top?
Right. Two buckets.
Oh, two buckets. Yeah?
Yes.
And then put another plank
another
on top.
Plank.
Ooh,
yes.
Scary.
And then I stand on top, yeah, it's scary, it's really scary, yeah.
How do you get onto it? Do you have a volunteer to help you?
No, I do it all by myself. It's part of the show. It's a small build-up. And the audience, they really do get very scared.
They
get very worried for me. And that's where the entertainment comes in.
A lovely thing.
Yeah.
Is that how you finish your show with the roller bowler?
That's right, yeah. That's the finale of the show.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. Oh, good.
Can you imagine my future ads, which is coming soon?
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going to be juggling clubs when I'm up there anymore. I'll be juggling knives. So
knives.
Knives. Knives on roller bowler. Yeah, that's really nice. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. So that's your big finish. That's good. And I got a couple of questions, which I might have to try to remember. The first one is, are there any volunteers in your show? And the second one is, if you're busking, how and when do you ask for money? Okay, so let's go to the volunteers. Are there any volunteers in your show?
Okay, unlike many other shows, mine is without volunteers, or if I may put it in another way, audience participation.
Yeah.
No. In my show, no. Why? Because I want to quickly do away with one show so that I can do it with I'd rather start with another, and yet another, yeah. And also I think my show is actually good enough not to really have audience participation to enhance it. Yeah, that's my personal point of view.
Well, that's very interesting.
Yeah.
That's very, very interesting. I mean, you're one of the first I've interviewed about 100 entertainers on my podcast, and I think you're probably one of the first who doesn't have audience participation. And I can see there's definitely a benefit, because if you rely on audience participation and the audience doesn't want to participate, then you've got a major problem. And sometimes I've gone to events where maybe the stage is like 10 foot high, so you can't get a member of the crowd onto the stage. Or I've been to events where, even because of insurance purposes, volunteers aren't allowed to come onto stage. So it'd be very useful to actually have a show that doesn't need a volunteer. That's very interesting. I like that very much.
Okay, and I tell you what, I think I might need to go. I'm so sorry.
No problem.
What was the last question before?
Yeah, the last question was, yes, actually we're coming to the end, so no worries. My last question is, if you are doing a street show, a circus, a circle show, how and when do you ask for money?
Oh, I see. That's a very important question. Yes. I would tell my audience that, you know, what I do is my job, and to keep it alive, I really do need support from you guys. And but more importantly, is that if you think that I deserve something, do drop them into my head. That's about it. Yeah.
Brilliant. And do you do that before you do your final balancing on the roller bowler and juggling, or do you do it?
Yes, definitely. Before. It's always before the finale to get everybody ready, the money.
All right. Yeah. I think you're breaking it up a bit, so and you've got to go. So we'll keep it short and sweet. So good to talk to you.
Sure. Yeah. You're welcome, Ben. Yeah.
All right. Take care, man. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ben. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Now. Thank you. Bye.